Good evening, everyone. I'm Linor Mudu, and welcome to Health Chat. Providing medical relief in developing countries is a topic that we will discuss today, and one organization is doing just that. Airborne Lifeline Foundation is a charitable organization working in a public-private partnership to provide a flying medical service. The organization works in countries like Botswana, Malawi, and Zambia. The foundation leases aircraft to transport healthcare professionals and medical supplies from Botswana's two largest cities to remote villages on a regular weekly or bi-weekly schedule. That's just one example of what they do. And we will talk more about they are doing on the ground. And joining us in the studio for more is Mr. Jonathan Miller, President and CEO of Airborne Lifeline Foundation. Mr. Miller, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
It's good to have you here with us. Also joining us via phone from Gaborone, Botswana, is Dr. Tanya R. Scott Mills. Dr. R. Scott Mills is with the University of Pennsylvania and has flown many hours with Airborne Lifeline on outreach. Mrs. R. Scott Mills, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Great. So let me start with you, Mr. Miller. This foundation was started several years ago. Tell us about the time frame in terms of when you decided to come with such an idea and really start flying logistics and things that people need on the ground to make a difference.
Well, my love affair with the continent of Africa started 30-some-odd years ago, and in 1983 I was the Peace Corps director in Botswana, and so I pretty well was intimately aware of the country's needs back then and the distances that were involved. And if one would go long distances by land transport once or twice, your enthusiasm for doing that wanes fairly significantly. And fast forward through many incarnations later, after I got out of government, I did a lot of aviation work. And during the HIV/AIDS crisis, I was down visiting Botswana. And it was obvious that even though President Mohai was very proactive on HIV/AIDS, because of the geography of Botswana, if you weren't in a major city, you were not going to be getting any medical attention on HIV/AIDS. And so I approached through Ambassador Joe Huggins, who was on my board now, but he was then the U.S. ambassador, the Minister of Health, a woman named Joy Pumafi, who later went to the WHO and the World Bank, and she's a visionary. She's sort of one of my mentors. And we discussed the possibility of us getting doctors to go out on air missions on a regular basis and not just sort of one-offs. And so what we came up with was the idea that we would start having medical specialists, and she desired that it not just be HIV/AIDS, but holistic, that would fly to a certain location, and so the same doctors would go to the same hospitals, and so a mother would see the same pediatrician at all times, and she'd make the effort to come in from the bush. Absent that, and that was, we started flying 8 years ago, people would not be getting that medical attention. So it's the first time that preventative care specialists visited these remote areas. And we started out in Botswana primarily because we wanted to start out in an environment that was favorable in a relatively in a relative sense, relatively good infrastructure, and proactive on HIV/AIDS.
Okay. And Dr. Ascott Mills, you've been flying with the foundation for a couple of years now, if that's my information is exact. Can you tell us how this relationship started and what really motivated you to join this initiative?
Well, certainly our organization, as the Botswana UPenn Partnership, had been asked to assist the government with HIV initially outreach to areas and to bring care, but also teaching and assistance in more complicated cases to the further outsides that couldn't get their patients in to Habarone for specialist care. So we've been asked to do this, and you know, we were looking at different means of doing that, and had been doing road, where we would drive to sites we could, but there were certainly sites that took us, you know, would take a day to get there, and then you would need to spend time seeing patients and then travel back a day, and so your time was precious time that could have been seeing patients was being spent in travel. And so when Airborne approached us and we learned of their services, it became logical to be using them and partnering so that we could fly out in the morning, see patients all day, and fly back, and then the next day be going to a different site or continuing with our normal service of care where we were. Hmm. So it just seemed like a natural fit and certainly has worked very well through the years.
Very interesting. Mr. Miller, the idea of flying up country, can you tell us how feasible it is in terms of even some the space to land the plane? How do you work around all these necessities?
Well, we worked. It was a real team effort. When it was, frankly, this whole idea, we just do the logistics. The whole idea was created by the sort of indigenous Botswana medical community, and then we've now trying to apply it in other countries, and we've learned, we've had a lot of scar tissue, we've had to modify things a lot, but we would look at areas where there'd be primary hospitals and where there were airstrips relatively nearby. So for instance, as Tonya said, we can take last week we went to Hanzi, which is out in the Kalahari Desert, and that's a long, long, long way. But we can take off in the morning. There's an airstrip nearby, and there's a very large catchment area of the San, the Bushmen that are come in from that area. And we can take a team out there. They'll have 12 hours of treatment, and then they can come back. And, for instance, there's high tuberculosis in that area, so we take TB specialists. So we look at where the airstrips are, where the primary hospitals are, and we sort of mix and match. We're blessed in Botswana by good flying weather and good infrastructure. We're being challenged in other, you know, for instance, in Malawi. So it's going to, as we branch out, it's going to get more and more difficult.
Mm. And doctor, when you look at some of the medical needs on the ground, I know that Mr. Miller started this initiative thinking about HIV/AIDS, but moving from HIV/AIDS to broadening the spectrum of diseases, what do you see? At least, what are some of the common issues that you are confronted with, or you have to handle?
It's a wide variety, from TB, HIV issues to seeing, as a pediatrician, seeing kids with diabetes, seeing kids with more rare conditions like muscular dystrophy. I remember in a patient in Hansi, to seeing kids with epilepsy, adults, it can be anything. There are some specialists see, you know, again, patients with diabetes or difficult to manage hypertension. At times, it's even taking our radiographer with us so we can do ultrasounds while we're there. To getting physiotherapy out to some of these sites, dietitians, speech therapists, people who, yeah, where there's only one or two of those specialists in the public sector in the country can get out.
Okay.
Sites.
And I was going to ask you. You mentioned about perhaps Rajul, you know, getting the some of the specialists there depending on what the needs are. What type of services are you able to offer firsthand, and what other services perhaps you require to get extra help, or perhaps to fly the person out if you ever had to do that?
It varies. So I think we often, like, for example, the patient I mentioned with, you know, a rare condition like muscular dystrophy, it was a child who had been, again, I think it was in Hanzi, who had been seeing the nurses and the local hospital staff for a number of years for this muscle weakness. And when we saw him at that point, it was very clear from the history and just the exam that this is probably what was going on. So instead of bringing the patient all the way to Haberone, what we did was drew the blood, drew the tests that we needed to be done there, and then transported the samples back to Haberone with us, ran, you know, submitted the tests, and then the next month when we were going back, we took our results back and was able to confirm the test there. And then because we were able to have physiotherapists and some other occupational therapists periodically go with us on the flights, this child actually never did come back into Haberone for care because we were able to provide it through outreach. Mm-hmm. Certainly there are times, you know, if a patient very much needs escalation of care, like intensive care or units and those kinds of services that you can't really just take on a plane, then we sometimes see them and say, yes, that patient needs to come into Haberone. But it can often save them a trip because we can make the arrangements, say, okay, let's book the CT, let's book the sort of specific tests you need to have done before they even get there, so they don't come, wait several days to get things arranged, and then have their tests.
Okay. And Mr. Miller, when you look at the approach, the foundation's approach, is the public-private partnership approach. Can you elaborate a little more on this and how country gets involved, how a country will get involved in the process of the work that you're doing?
Well, it's each of the three countries we've been in so far have been slightly different, and I will anticipate that we'll be different when we go to start having our discussions with Namibia. But when we first approached the government of Botswana, there was a bit, even though they were proactive, there was a bit of skepticism because there were some saying, well, why should we listen to a consultant from Washington? I was actually, my wife and I actually created this foundation, and at first, after we got past the skepticism of the government of Botswana through Minister Pamafi, and it became an enthusiastic relationship between Botswana and us, there was extreme skepticism by the traditional medical establishment. And CDC, for instance, said, oh, this is a luxury. And so even though I'd signed a memorandum of understanding with the government of Botswana, I had no funding. So my wife and I mortgaged our farm in Virginia, and that's how we started. But once we started, and we then got some private contributions from people like the Merck Foundation, then the Center for Disease Control and the PEPFAR program saw the results, and funding became more
accessible,
more robust.
Okay.
But as in everything else, at some point the U.S. government, although it's been extremely generous, can't continue to fund things. So then we went to the next stage, and that's when we started working with the private sector in Botswana. And, for instance, President Mohai is also the chairman of a regional supermarket group called Choppies. And so Choppies now provides their aircraft to us at cost. So we're maturing to a different thing where the private sector of Botswana, along with Air Botswana as an example, are now beginning to contribute. So we're moving from my personal contribution to the U.S. government contribution to now the private sector in Botswana's contribution. That's just one example. Malawi's been far more problematic because Malawi's a much, it's a poorer country.
I guess each country will have its own approach, not approach, but I think the experience would perhaps be different per country. But when you talk about when you look at the doctors and the medical personnel, I believe earlier when we were speaking, you said that you bring the plane, you bring the resources and the supplies, and then you work with local doctors. Is this accurate?
Well, we've signed an agreement in Botswana and Malawi, and now in Zambia with the ministries of health. So we have memorandums of understanding with the ministries of health. We do the logistics. We do the Tanya knows, she works very closely with our operations person, who's fantastic, and we organize the flights and get the doctors rostered, so to speak. But they're all done under the rubric of the Ministry of Health, and all the doctors, whether they're expatriates or natives of Botswana, Malawi, Zambia, are sort of blessed by the Ministry of Health. But there's numerous doctors from different organizations, whether it's University of Pennsylvania, Baylor, University of North Carolina, Harvard, that contribute to this.
And Dr. Ascott Mills, your work goes beyond providing care. You also train. Is this accurate?
Botswana in 2009 established its first medical school. Mm-hmm. And so as part of that establishment, they realized that they needed to train doctors to be able to work in rural areas to provide care outside of the city. And so they very much incorporated rural medicine into their curriculum. And so as part of that, when they're, for example, on their pediatrics rotation, they go with us on outreach and be are able to see, well, how does this case present differently when I'm in a rural area? How do I need to think about it differently when I don't have as many resources at my fingertips, or decide, can this patient be cared for here and just seen once a month, or do I need to transfer them in? And so it's teaching them those skills and being able to, in a sense, triage in a different environment and see what presents differently in different areas of the country. And so very much now as part of our pediatric outreach and the students' rotations, they join us on outreach.
Okay. Well, we are going to take a short break. Dr. Ascott Mills and Mr. Miller, please stay with us to continue this discussion that we enjoy very much. And we'll be right back after this short break. Welcome back. If you're just joining us late tonight, we are discussing providing medical relief, and the organization we are featuring is Airborne Lifeline Foundation. In the studio with me is Mr. Jonathan Miller, who is the president and CEO of the foundation, and we are also joined by Dr. Tanya Ascott Mills. Dr. Ascott Mills is with the University in Pennsylvania and is also working with Airborne Lifeline Foundation. Now, part of what you do is flying. Tell us about this process, the planes. Where do the planes come from? How do you check for safety? Help us understand this process.
Well, we made a conscious decision that we were not going to bring in our own aircraft. We would like to, among other things, support the economy of the countries. So we go in and monitor and audit all the aircraft operators in the country, and then we decide, and we go out, put everything out to tender, but after we've inspected their safety record, their maintenance record, what the equipment they have, et cetera. And then we always employ aircraft operators within the country, just because it's good to have them as a partnership, and it also helps the economy out. So, but it's we do an annual inspection of all the operators, and then we decide who we're going to use.
So specifically, when it comes to the plane, is it adapted to like a medical facility, or you use the plane just to fly?
We take a different approach. There are planes in these countries that are equipped to be medevac aircraft. And that's a fantastic service that's been provided throughout all of Africa for a long time. Our job is to take preventative care specialists out on a scheduled basis. So we use normal aircraft that are just as fitted out for carrying passengers and cargo, because we do carry drugs and we do carry bring back samples to the labs and things like that. But it's a normal, it's not a medevac aircraft.
Okay. And Dr. Ascott-Mills, when you look at the type of impact that this program has been having on the ground, can you share with us perhaps some success stories or lessons learned that you have come across?
Lessons learned. Well, I think we've learned that, as I think Dr. Miller said, that often having the same doctor going to the same site over time is better, because they develop a relationship not just with patients they're seeing, but with staff, and being able to then know what is really doable at sites and to work with the staff there to improve certain aspects of care that's given when they're not there. But also then they know me as a pediatrician, and they're much more comfortable calling me when they have questions when I'm not there. So that's certainly been a lesson learned. Also, I think, you know, we do learn which kinds of conditions are more conducive to this type of outreach and things as well. And obviously logistical things in terms of what's really feasible, how many patients can we see in a day, what kinds of things do we need to have on the ground. So, for example, we have learned that sometimes because some of these hospitals are not equipped with what we call specialist drugs, where specific medications and certain things that really in the country is decided that really it needs to be a specialist who can prescribe that drug. And when these are sites that don't usually have those specialists on a daily basis, we've learned, okay, well, we need to take a certain supply with us or make sure that these things are available now that we have a specialist going regularly. We've learned at times, yes, it makes sense to bring a radiographer with us or certain ancillary staff, because they can then augment what we can do over time.
Are you able to conduct surgery?
No, we don't. On the flights that we go on a regular basis, we have not done that. But we do have surgeons who go out, and then we'll see patients and make decisions, okay, these ones should come back to Habaroni for surgery, or these ones I can do the follow-up there after they've been into town for the surgery, so that the patient doesn't have to travel back to the city.
Okay. And Mr. Miller, how long does a doctor in the program that flies internationally in the country, how long will they stay on the ground on average?
Well, usually there's some exceptions to the rule up in Malawi. And in Malawi, we actually take them up to place like from a long way to Mzuzu, and then they go out by land transport and hit a lot of locations in the north. So that's a different issue. In Botswana, usually they go out for one day, and because you can't clone these doctors, and a lot of them need to be back in Habaroni. So we'll leave, and they'll have 12 hours on the ground, and then they'll come back. And some other cases, we'll take them up to Moun, for instance, up at north, and then they'll go one day into Gumari on the west of the Okavango Delta, and another day to Soronga, which is up in the north. So, but usually it's one day. It's one full day of treatment. And we want to make it as enthusiastic for the doctors, and the doctors are based in the capital cities, and they want to be with their families. And so if you make it as easy as possible and say, okay, you're going to leave your kids in the morning, but you're going to see them in the evening, and still you're going to get out in the bush and have a full day of practice, that's, you know, the sort of ideal thing.
So what is the way forward for Airborne Lifeline Foundation? Do you plan on expanding in different regions, even West Africa?
Well, we're a relatively small organization, and we want to continue to be successful. So we've sort of taken baby steps. You know, we've just signed another 5-year memorandum extension with Botswana. We're going to try to have, the private sector take over more and more of the funding. And ultimately, you know, the U.S. government is out of the business of funding us. So they have to take ownership of this. In the meantime, we're going to expand in Malawi. We're looking at not only doing what we did, which was originally a pediatric HIV/AIDS work, but we're talking to, there's only one cancer center in Malawi, and it's in Blantyre. And we're looking at pediatric and neonatal cancer. And by the time the kids get diagnosed, they're usually in stage 4 cancer. So we're talking about going out and doing screenings in Malawi if I get the funding. As I said, we've just started work in Zambia. And in Zambia, what we're doing is it's, you know, because the fight against HIV/AIDS has been somewhat successful, women are now surviving from HIV/AIDS, but then they have cervical cancer. So we're doing what's part of this Pink Red Ribbon initiative with the Center for Disease Control, the George Bush Center, et cetera. We're going out and we're helping inoculate school-age girls with HPV vaccines in Zambia, and we're actually going out and screening women for cervical cancer. So, and we're talking about going into Namibia and then Mozambique. It's going to be a while before we can go farther and farther afield because we're a very small organization. We're very lean and mean. We're the, if Bill Gates' organization is the alpha of NGOs, we're the omega of NGOs.
That's a good way of putting it, I guess. And Dr. Ascott Mills, as a pediatrician, I wanted to ask you something that Mr. Miller just mentioned about neonatal cancer. It is something that we don't very often hear about, not as much at least as we should, but it is, when I travel to countries in sub-Saharan Africa in my reporting, I've met women, men, people that were confronted with this problem, but they don't know where to go. What is the situation in Botswana? Just as a pediatrician, is it something that you come across very often? What can you tell us about the way it's being addressed, if at all it's being addressed?
Well, I think Botswana may be slightly different to somewhere like Zambia, in that certainly we're having to deal with some of the same health issues, but Botswana has a relatively strong health infrastructure. So most of our babies are born in a health facility in the country, and therefore are at least seen by often a midwife or someone. And when they pick up such problems, they do have access to transferring the patient. It may take a little bit of time to work on transport and getting them transferred. So I think we tend to probably pick some of those things up a little bit sooner.
Okay.
In that sense. I wouldn't say it's been a common problem here.
Okay.
Certainly other types of pediatric cancer and issues are.
All right. This called for its own discussion anyway. Mm-hmm. And before we wrap up, Mr. Miller, anything about the way forward with the foundation?
No, I think we're just going to continue to look at additional countries and additional missions. This, as I say, the cervical cancer initiative is something that is relatively new for us, and it's going to continue to expand. The cervical cancer, the Pink Red Ribbon initiative in Africa, and I see that may take us into more countries in the future.
Thank you so much for joining us, Mr. Jonathan Miller. Dr. Tanya Ascott Mills, thanks for joining us from Botswana.
Thank you.
And thanks to you, listeners, for joining us on this edition of Health Chats. For more on today's show, join us on facebook.com/VOA Health Chat. I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, with producer Jackson Bungani. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.